Tape 3, Side A. This will be the fourth interview with Mr. Fred Bean.
In our last interview, we were talking about the problem of subsidence and the effect it had on the city of Long Beach.
It had a terrific a financial slowdown in the city of Long Beach because people were afraid to build anything or to do anything on account of the fact that they were afraid that it would sink to the point that the buildings would break. And some of them did crack by cause of the subsidence.
Did you have any problems with that in your own business?
No, mine didn't have a bit of it. And after Admiral James and Darrell Neighbors got with the city and the Navy and the people, including the Chamber of Commerce and all, they worked out an agreement to go ahead and out of the oil money, or the state of California got into it too, and out of the oil money, they paid for subsidence, and they hired Martin Mishkin Engineering Company to develop the pumps that pump the water into it. And we used the water at the first part, and we used it out of the Metropolitan Metropolitan Water District. And we used that, and then later on, we used refined water. It had been taken out of the sewage system and had been cooled and then used that water, which saved a lot of money on water. The land started building up, and the minute we started building up, we weren't worried about losing the Navy, and we weren't worried about the city sinking because it was building up and building up very fast. And for years it was in that position. So just recently they were slowing down on their water pumping in, and the state had to step in and say they had to go ahead and do it again.
So the state stepped in, and who were they pushing to?
They're pushing the oil, Tums Oil Company.
Mm-hmm.
So Tums Oil Company was the one that had to put the water in and had to run it, and they'd come out of the revenue of the oil to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And it did a good job, and it will do as long as they put in a barrel of water for every barrel of oil they take out, it will still stay there.
Who actually then controls this? Do you know whether or not is the city supervising this, or do you say the state?
I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what it shifted around. It went to the oil. The director of oil operations for the city of Long Beach, and it went from him to the Harbor Department, and I think it's between the Harbor Department and Tums at the present time to see it's going, and they do it in conjunction with the State Lands Commission.
Why was the oil company so reluctant to...
The oil companies... Everybody is reluctant to admit any claim, any responsibility for it, because they were afraid that they would have liability suits charged against them for damages.
Mm-hmm.
Clear uptown, and then there was no end to how far it was going. And places like the Edison Company, Craig Shipyard, probably got the worst end of it. Venetian Square was getting as bad. Even to Jurgen's Trust Building was getting it so bad that they decided they'd close up their arcade on account of that.
Were all the oil companies reluctant to recognize the problem? Or
yes, they all were. Tums was one of them, and then Standard Oil Company had a lot of individual leases that they bought them up from people that went out and signed up leases on their properties and so forth. And they all... we're very reluctant. The reason my building, you asked about my building showing any damage, Well, even if it didn't show any damage, it was an experimental building put up by the Lattice Steel Company.
The which steel?
Lattice Steel. They had taken channel iron and split it with a splitting tool and then expanded it. And when they expanded it, it gave a chance to set it up and weld it together and then gunite it or pour it on each side with the concrete. And that building was solid and it's still solid. It's gone through earthquakes and everything else. And it never had a crack. It was built because we couldn't buy anything else to build it with. In 46, right after the war, we built it. And so it's one of those things.
Was this process a result of experimentation?
Well, a lot of steel was, the framework was. But I made a couple mistakes on it. And one of the mistakes was lattice steel put the beams on 3-foot centers and all construction was put on 4-foot centers and consequently lath or anything didn't fit. So we had to go and wire on 1/2-inch steel rods all over the building to fasten our plasterboard to put the plaster on. And when they had an earthquake or a slight earthquake or anything had happened, the building would shift enough without breaking because it would shift on those wires. And it was something that we hadn't planned on, but it worked well.
A happy accident.
Yeah, a happy accident.
Well, the people who were most concerned in meeting with you with your group, were they mainly downtown business people?
They were downtown business people. They were people that worked on it, like Mr. Ritter, the head of the Press Telegram, Herman, and Johnson, the congressman, and he was an attorney here in town. It was George Johnson's father, and practically everybody, some people from the Harbor Department and all, but the people that had us on this committee were people that didn't have any direct interest, like the Harbor Department or the oil companies or any of that. It was strictly a committee that was working to solve a problem, of which we finally got it solved, and then we turned it over to them to run it.
So some of the people who were on the committee were not necessarily Chamber of Commerce people?
No, they were not. Some of them were. Most of them were, but some of them weren't. For that reason, they stayed out of anyone that had any. We didn't invite anybody into the committee that was aligned with that particular deal of subsidence. We'd affect them because we want to keep away from any place where there might be anything would be a liability on anybody.
Well, now, Llewellyn Bixby was on some committee, for instance.
Llewellyn Bixby was on this committee.
Mm-hmm.
And Dale Neighbors was working for him, and that's how we got Dale, because he allowed us to use Dale. Yes. And Llewellyn paid for his for Dale.
Well, now, you've brought in some material here. I'm going to get back to the Miss Universe
case. I don't have to.
Okay.
I don't have to.
We brought up to come back to the subject of the Miss Universe contest, and you had given me earlier the dates of when that really got started.
In about 1950, the Miss America pageant was supported a whole lot by clothing and bathing suit and dress houses, and one of the biggest people and groups was the Catalina Bathing Suit Company, of which Mr. Stewart was the president and practically the owner of the of the Catalina Bathing Suit Company in Los Angeles. And he had a man that represented him and worked for him on the pageant for Miss America by the name of Oscar Meinhardt. Oscar Meinhardt was a very fine producer and was very much interested in Miss America until they changed their method of approach. And when they put in, they had to be a professional person or a cook or domestic person or something. They had to have a vocation besides being a beautiful girl and wearing beautiful clothes and so forth. He decided he wanted to stay with principally the bathing suit side. So he withdrew from Miss America and had Oscar Meinhardt come out here, and he come to the Chamber of Commerce and talked to us about starting this deal, of which we did. And our first president of it was Mason Kite, who was here in town, and at that time was manager of the Long Beach Amusement Company. And he was the first president, and was president for 2 years. And in that 2 years, we developed a lot of publicity for the city of Long Beach. June Doughty was our executive secretary, and 1954 and 55, I become the president. Although all the time that Mr. Stewart was alive, he was considered the president of it because he financed it.
Now, did he finance it entirely? You have mentioned to me at one point a Dave Lipton from the Universal International Studios.
Well, they didn't do so much with financing as they gave the girls prizes for winning of a job in moving pictures or things that they could use from that. And they took all the girls through the Universal Studios and got them acquainted with all the people up there, and they did everything for us to work with us. But they didn't put any real money into it. The real money was put in by Mr. Stewart.
Was it the Citizens of Long Beach or your local committee?
The city of Long Beach adopted it with the council as a promotion deal for the city of Long Beach, and they worked hard for it. The city government really all the way through. The police department furnished the police protection and everything for the girls and to check us on our parades and everything we did. The police department did that for us. The fire department was very helpful to us for seeing if the auditorium was safe, and the police checked it to make sure that we didn't overcrowd it or something like that, because at that time we only had the auditorium to have it in, and it only seated 3,400 people, and it filled up awful fast. So as far as I'm concerned, the city did a terrific job for us, but Catalina's swimsuit did the most.
Yeah.
And when Mr. Stewart died, his wife inherited the deal, and she couldn't run it, and she sold out to a New York hosiery company that took over, and they wanted so much money for the right to use it for Long Beach that we couldn't pay it and come out with the profit, for any profit or even break even on it, and we decided to give it up, and they took it back to New York and had it there. After we started it, after we started Miss Universe, we made it international, so we had to develop a new company, which was Miss USA. And Miss USA was the one to furnish the person to represent the United States in the international pageant. And so we had that, and so we had to run off all the states as states to run, and they had their deals and their promotion deals for each state, and then they sent their girl here to run into Miss USA, and after Miss USA fashion was over, then we went right into Miss Universe pageant, and the winner of Miss USA become the representative for the United States in the pageant, along with all the European and Central America and Middle East people, and by that we had a good broad view of international relationship, and I think it did the United States a whole lot of good, and I think it did the City of Long Beach a terrific amount of good, because we hired a agency to what they call a clipping agency. They clipped out the write-ups in all the papers, foreign papers, and over the country, and sent it to us, and we just got piles of those every day from them. Certainly we got a lot of publicity for free, and I think that was one thing alone that really helped us, and the first time that the United States, that I know of, had done anything that we got in so much representation in foreign countries from a thing, more so because Miss America was a United States deal.
Right.
And Miss Universe was international, and that's the reason we had to have Miss USA first.
Well then, Miss Universe, the title Miss Universe belonged obviously to the Catalina swimsuit deal.
It belongs to Catalina swimsuit.
And I was looking here at these brochures. Here's 1954 is Miss Universe, and then here's another one, which is, what's the date on this? 1961, which then become the International Beauty Congress.
When we tried to take it over, and got into some litigation on it, and an attorney here by the name of George Tobin formed a corporation that was called the International Congress. International.
Well, this is the brochure. I don't know what the organization.
Yeah, International Beauty Congress.
Yeah.
And that was what we had in place of the Miss Universe, because we lost the Miss Universe name when we lost when Mr. Stewart's wife sold the business to this hotel company. They bought the Miss Universe name, and we didn't have it anymore, so we had to form this corporation.
Okay.
And then we got into litigation because we were just changing the name and using something that had been developed by them. And so we finally decided it was best to quit.
About how many years were you able to succeed as International Beauty Congressman?
I don't know. Just a very few years. I would say, I think last we had was 1968, and that's the International Beauty Contest started in 1961.
Mm-hmm. So it lasted about 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
Something else that I'd like to visit with is you've been very active in the Mounted Police Department, and we talked in our earlier visits. Apparently, you've been a horseback rider from a young child, as a young child.
Well, we always had horses.
You mentioned using your horse to deliver newspapers as a young boy.
I delivered newspapers as a boy, and I delivered groceries for my father. And in those days, we were on a grocery store. My father's grocery store was at Anaheim and Walnut. And we drove it all the way up to Signal Hill and out
to as far as Bixby's Ranch, Fred Bixby's Ranch, and down to Alameda Avenue. Alameda was a kind of a cutoff there, and we didn't go south of that because there was another grocery store just below us there that had that business, and that was when the town was run and places were few and far between. And we would deliver groceries not by address, but by the name of the person that was going to get them.
Well, you had mentioned that you used to ride out of the Bixby Ranch, and I gather that's how you got friendly with Fred?
Mrs. John Bixby, who was Fred's mother, used to have a driver by the name of Billy McCann that would drive a one-horse buggy downtown once a week with Miss Bixby so she could do her shopping and come home. But she would always have to stop by our house on the way home because it was quite a long drive for the buggy, and Mother would always have coffee and cake or pie or something for her, and then she'd make the bounce of the trip because it was about 3 miles downtown and 6 miles farther out the ranch. So I become acquainted with her, and through that I become acquainted with her son Fred. And then I like to ride horseback, and Fred invited me out there, so I'd ride my bicycle out there and then ride horseback.
Oh, so you actually rode Fred's horses then?
Yeah, I never rode mine out there.
Mm-hmm.
And he got to be very well acquainted as I grew up and got into civic affairs in the city of Long Beach. He got so that he would call me and get me to do certain things to him, things in the city and the county. And finally, when the climax of my time was when Eugene Bisclue was running for the first time he ever run for sheriff. He ran for sheriff, and I was his campaign chairman for the southeast corner of Los Angeles County. And at that time, Mr. Bill Prisk of the Press-Telegram and Mr. Fred Bixby were my two people I really relied on to keep the campaign going.
And how did you get interested in Sheriff Biscaloos? Is that through your horseback riding?
No, I got interested in Sheriff Biscaloos through my brother-in-law, who was a assistant to City Manager Windham. And City Manager Windham would have been a friend of long-standing Gene Biscaloos, so they would stop there all the time. And then when Gene went around for sheriff, my brother-in-law told him that he should get me for the chairman.
What was your brother-in-law's name?
Norbert Kint, K-I-N-T.
So was he involved then in the city?
He was kind of an assistant. He wasn't assistant to city manager or anything, but he was assistant. He was a man that can go out and do these kind of jobs, all the jobs, go see people if they're going to see Windham, or go out and check up on things. He was kind of a field representative for him, and he was his driver, drove his car for him. So they were, that's how I got mixed up there.
Well, you have all these horse statues, and we talked about your stables and all, and I'd like to know more about your work or your activities with the Long Beach Mounted Police.
Well, in 1934, I ate in a restaurant called New House Cafe, and the New House brothers decided they wanted to have horses.
Where was the New House Cafe?
On 4th Street, just off of Long Beach Boulevard, right next to my store, my radio store. And so I'd go in there, and they got these horses, and then several other people got into it, including Dr. Bishop, who was right here in town, and they rented the place.
Is he the bishop, Dr. Bishop, who was Bishop of the clinic?
Yeah, mm-hmm. He's just retiring now. So he was my doctor for a good many years from the time he came here, and so I got into my heart condition, and then I had it turned over to somebody else. But I see him every week. He takes me to my service club and comes back and takes me home and so forth. So it works out very nice during this illness I'm having. But they asked me if I wouldn't come in, and I said I wanted to come in because I'd always had horses before. I got mixed up in this radio business, and I didn't have horses then. And I had gone to University of California at Davis and taken animal husbandry and horsemanship and horse training, and I'd also taken feeds and feeding and things of that type, so I was tied up into the horse picture fairly well before, but no time to do it.
How long were you at Davis?
Huh? I was only there 1 year. The war came along and took me out.
Well, I didn't want to interrupt you, but I did.
That was in 1917 and 18 that I was in Davis. And then I came back and went into the war. I went to the shipyards. I worked for the shipyards during the wartime. And when my draft came up, and the draft board called on me, the shipyard protested it because I was an inspector for the shipyard at the time and they didn't want me to go. So they kept me.
So there you were in 1934.
In 1934, I was invited into the Long Beach Battle Police as an associate member. And I went into it, and then in 1935 we decided to incorporate. And we incorporated in 1935. And then we were asked to lead the Tournament of Roses. And the Tournament of Roses, our group didn't have too much silver saddles, but they bought enough of them, and they had enough horses of different ones, but they were all good-looking horses, but they were not all Palominos. Mr. Turner of the Turner Oil Company and Mr. What's the racetrack out here? Mr. Vessel, decided we should have all Palomino horses and silver saddles. So they went into that, and finally, in 1954, I become an active rider, and I bought my silver saddle and trailer and Palomino horse, and I've ridden ever since. I rode 21 rides out of the from 54 till the time I quit riding in the Turn of Roses. I rode 21 different parades.
Well, when did the Mounted Police actually get started then?
It started in 35. And then we started leading, quick as we led the Pasadena Tournament Roses, other places started to ask us to ride in their parades. And the first thing is, we was going down to the different rodeos around the country, and we rode in rodeos in Phoenix, Arizona, and in Albuquerque, and Canada. And Pendleton, Oregon, and Cheyenne, Wyoming, and then we started branching out and riding in towns like Yuma, Arizona, and the different towns at Tucson, Arizona. We rode in a lot of these hot towns, Palm Springs, because it advertised Long Beach. We were a publicity unit really for Long Beach without being paid for it. We was a non-profit organization. But
well, how did they get the name of the Long Beach Mounted Police?
One of the fellows that joined with us group early in the group was a policeman, and he had